The thought that grace is a matter of divine favor, that God is pleased with us if we believe in Him, and that this is all that we need to do, is so deep-seated that it's very difficult for us to somehow uproot it from our consciousness. We meditate and we keep thinking that, well, God, please forgive me, please accept me even though I've made mistakes. All of these with an attitude to thinking that He will be displeased if we do the wrong thing, and He'll somehow be pleased with us and pat us on the head if we do the right thing. We don't somehow get into our consciousness clearly enough that, in fact, God is ourselves. It would be wrong to say we are God. As Master explained, the ocean can't say that it's the wave, but it can say that the ocean has become this wave. We can't say that the wave is the ocean, forgive me, I meant it that way, that the little wave can't say that it's the vast ocean, but we can say that the ocean has become this wave and all waves, and that that ocean is our reality. The reality of the wave is a temporary thing, something constantly moving. The only permanent reality in the wave is the fact that it's made up of the same water as that which exists in the ocean. Nor is it that that water moves from here to here to here as the wave moves. It's the movement itself that creates the illusion of a wave as a specific reality. But it's always as the wave moves, going across different atoms, molecules of water. And so are we. We don't have a separate reality. Our thoughts are not our own. This ego, in fact, ultimately, is not our own. It's composed of a self-definition that we create in viewing our body and personality in relation to the world around us. But it isn't who we really are. We are God if we get away from the ego, if we get away from the personality with its likes and dislikes, if we get away from the body. Behind that, underneath that, is that ocean. And all the movement that we do in thought, in bodily motion, etc., all of this is just an illusion. We are that infinite ocean expressing for a little bit of time in this little body. And ultimately we have to go back and realize that that ocean is our reality. Now then, who is to please whom? We've just got to tune ourselves to this truth. That's all there is to it. Yogananda one time commissioned a painter, a well-known artist in Bengal, to do a portrait of Lahiri Mahajai, the guru of his guru. And this man did it, but he wasn't in tune with the spiritual realities. And so whereas he did an adequate portrait of a human being, it didn't have that radiance that one would find in meeting a master. And so Master wasn't satisfied. And he asked this man, the man didn't seem content that he didn't like it, and so he asked the man, how long did it take you to master your art? The man said, 20 years. Master said, you mean it took you 20 years to convince yourself you could paint? And the man was really quite offended by this. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I'd like to see you learn to paint as well in twice that length of time. Master said, give me a week. Well, this sounded to the painter like an insult, and he just walked away. So Master started in to paint a portrait. Now, he didn't say, God, please give me a portrait. He tried to attune himself, as he used to say, I will reason, I will, I will act, but guide thou my reason, will, and activity to the right path in everything. We've got to do, and in the doing make mistakes, and in the mistakes learn, and in the learning get it better each time around until finally we've got it right. A painter who puts the wrong stroke on a canvas doesn't say, oh, darn it, I blew it again. He says, no, I did a mistake. I think I won't do it that way. And he does it the way he wants to. And if it isn't right the second time, he does it a third time, and a fourth time, and a hundredth time. Edison one time, to make one invention went through 40,000 experiments. His own co-workers after 20,000 said, let's give up. He said, no, why? We've only found 20,000 ways that don't work. We still haven't found the one way that does. And he kept on until he got it. And this is the way that we have to do things. It's the way Yogananda went at it. He didn't get it right the first time, but he kept concentrating more and more, attuning himself more and more to that kind of consciousness that produces art. And after a week, finally, he had done a painting. And then he asked somebody to call the artist, and he hid behind the door while the artist looked at it. And the artist said, who did that? It's much better than mine. Then Yogananda came out and he said, you want to know who did it? But the thing is that we have to do it. A saint is a sinner who never gave up. We have to believe in our ability, not that I can do it, like that story I told yesterday, that how I learned Greek well enough to pass that exam by saying, I'm a Greek. And then I said, but it wouldn't have worked if I had said, I'm a Greek. It had to be, I'm a Greek. The emphasis had to be on what I was doing, not on myself. It's an interesting physiological fact that the ego, as Yogananda described, explained, is rooted in the, centered in the medulla oblongata. And that's why when people are particularly proud, they draw their heads back, and you say they look down their noses at people, but the reason they're looking down their noses is because this tension back here is drawing their heads back. And so they're like this all the time. Or somebody's, you notice people who are public entertainers or something, you often see them sort of throwing their heads around it because of all the tension back here. I'm doing this, look at me everybody, that kind of thought. Well, this energy which we want to express in creative work, in our prayer, in anything that we want to do that's worthwhile, needs to come up the spine and out through the spiritual eye, the center between the eyebrows. That's when you will to do something, you knit your eyebrows. This is the seat of will, and it's will that we need to exert in order to accomplish well whatever we try to accomplish. Now that energy coming up, if we hold strongly to the thought, I am doing it, gets blocked here. That's why it's an interesting phenomenon. People have said that genius is very closely akin to madness. And it's an interesting thought too, which I've mentioned in my book, The Artist as a Channel, that the artists, musicians, and so on, prior to the 19th century, when the Romantic movement began, and there was that thought that the artist was a very special creation, a very sort of superior human being, back in the days when artists were forced into a more humble role and therefore were more humble, you don't find any more insanity in art or music or whatever than you do in the normal run of humanity. Suddenly in the 19th century we find so many artists losing their mental balance, Hugo Wolf, Vincent van Gogh, again and again, Nietzsche and so on, you find again and again there is this imbalance that comes because the flow of energy coming up became blocked here, and because they were geniuses and brought more energy to the brain than most people, I mean most people painting a painting, well, you know, like this, no energy to it, so they're not going to go crazy, but if you, you know, I say they're there already, but if you send a great surge of energy to the brain and block it, then there's a tremendous impact there, a tremendous imbalance results. And that's why people who are geniuses sometimes do go crazy. It's not that genius is close to it, it's that high energy blocked results in imbalance. It's very simple. And what we need to do is release that flow, not say, I'm a Greek. You find that people who boastfully say speak about their accomplishments rarely do achieve great accomplishments. Sometimes it happens because they've got enough good karma, because they've got enough right energy also. But the secret to creativity, the secret to getting it right on any level, from the most mundane to the most spiritual, is that understanding that the energy has to come up to the brain and then fulfill itself in the will. That when you will something, you will to put it into action, and all that energy has to go out. So in that story I told yesterday, I'm a Greek. And by saying I'm a Greek, I attuned myself to the thought of being a Greek. And suddenly I was able to absorb that information that all Greeks grow up with, their language. It came naturally to me because I thought of myself as being that. I found that that's a very good way to learn a language, to think of yourself not as an American in Italy, let's say, or France or whatever, but as an Italian or a Frenchman or an Indian or whatever it might be. And so Master did that with painting. He was an artist. Anything that you want to do, you can do. Somebody said to somebody who was trying to accomplish something that was very difficult, he said, but you've never done that sort of thing before. What makes you think you can do that? He said, well, other people have done it, haven't they? Well, sure, they've done it. Well, they're human beings, aren't they? Yeah, I suppose so. I'm a human being too. Why shouldn't I be able to do it? And he went ahead and did it. There isn't anything that anybody has done ever that you couldn't do if you really put your mind to it. And why does it take so long? Why does it take incarnations? Because you haven't convinced yourself that you can do it. Because you haven't attuned yourself to that ray of consciousness. That's why in this saying of Yogananda's on success and failure, that success comes from attuning yourself to God's power. God's power manifests itself on many levels. It's the only power ultimately in the universe. So don't think that to accomplish anything you've got to get in tune with Him in samadhi. You can bring that power to whatever level you're working on, and if you're a very worldly person, you can use it to become a successful gambler. That doesn't mean God wants you to gamble, but if you're gambling, then you use His power for that. If you want to be a good mafioso, you can use that power for that. You're the one who breaks down ultimately for doing that, because you use it in the wrong way. But ultimately, it's His power with which we breathe. It's His power with which we think. And the more we can tune in, therefore, to that power, the more we can manifest it on every level. You know that song we just sang this morning, Door of My Heart? This is a Bengali song that Master translated into English. And in the Bengali, it's a lovely song in English, too. There's a very sweet quality to it. In the Bengali, it says, the cottage of my heart I keep always open to your coming. And there was one passage there that Master didn't translate. That passage said, I'm just a beggar before your door. Master said, I'm not going to translate that. He always said, don't come before God like a beggar. You are His child. You have a right to everything that He has. You have a right to be everything that He is. And why do you have that right? Because you're that already. You don't have to attain anything. You're swimming in the ocean of bliss. And yet you're grieving because you spilled coffee on your tie. You're there already. A saint is a sinner who never gave up. We've got to live in that consciousness that what St. Francis was, what Buddha was, what Krishna was, people are always showing their devotion to their guru by saying, well, he could do that. Jesus could be that. Yogananda could be that. But I'm just a humble disciple. Well, that's perfectly good. We should be humble disciples. But what does it mean to be a disciple? To be a disciple means to try to attune yourself. Yogananda was being a disciple to the principle of art when he tried to attune himself more and more perfectly to what he was doing. To be a disciple doesn't mean to grovel. To be a disciple means to try to attune yourself to what a person is doing who knows how to do it well, so that you can do it well too. That's all it's about. That when he expressed certain qualities in his life, it wasn't to show how great he was, Jesus didn't come here to tell us what a great soul he was. He came to show us what we can be. That's what he said himself. People really, they think that they're showing their devotion to Jesus by talking about his greatness. To a very great extent, they're insulting him, because they're taking the husk and leaving out the life, the food. What he came was not to show us anything but our potential, what we can achieve. And so when we try, when we believe, it would be good to get rid of this thing as the definition of a Christian. I believe. Do you believe, brother? Yeah! Listen, if you believe, go into samadhi. You won't be able to talk. You won't be able to sit up there, hallelujah! It's a quiet thing. You go into the silence and suddenly you are that. Ramakrishna used to say that the bee makes a lot of noise when it's outside the flower, but once it's in the flower, it's quiet because it's sipping honey. We've got to get into that silence within where we can commune. You need to believe in the way that Emerson needed to believe that there was something available there, until finally after 40,000 experiments he found what it was. He needed to believe in that sense, yeah. But that's not faith yet. Faith comes when you've experienced. And so we need to experience the truth. We need to become the truth. When you believe, try to make your belief an attunement. I have many of you have seen my home at Ananda. It began with that geodesic dome. And the geodesic dome, we finally cured the leaks by simply putting a roof over it. When we didn't have the roof, we tried so many things. And we painted hypalon, and we put fiberglass, and we did this, and we did that. And one day I remember thinking, we're so sincere. Why does that water keep coming through? And so here we are. We're so sincere. Why doesn't he just forgive us all the other things? Well, we've got to do our job. And if it takes a million years, we've got to do our job. When we do, we'll be fit to get there. When we've sealed all those leaks. Yogananda used to say that most people are like leaky pipes, rusty pipes. They seal up one and breaks out through another. But when we get into divine consciousness, suddenly we find the whole pipe is either replaced or with a new body or completely renewed. We need to get into that consciousness. Now, mind you, here is the beauty of it, that if that rain, let's say, had some sort of quality that getting into a hole would seal it, there are liquids like that that you can buy at the hardware store, that they will get into a pipe and then they'll seal the holes. Now, if we could understand that God's light is also like that, that we don't have to do all the work of sealing every hole, we don't have to worry that much about our mistakes. We have to keep trying to attune ourselves to the positive side. But once we get into that light purifies us automatically. The more we live in the consciousness of bliss, in the consciousness of love, the more we find without any particular effort on our part, things are happening. People often coming to Ananda come with all sorts of lines of frustration, anger, all the various things people carry around with them. And this has been the constant experience at Ananda, that after a weekend or a week, they look like different human beings. I remember once also seeing somebody whom I knew very well, but who was going through some sort of a difficult time in her life. And I was to meet her at a train station, and everybody got off the train. I didn't see her. So I thought, well, maybe she slipped under my gaze somehow. So I went to the waiting room. The waiting room was empty except for one person. I saw that person. Well, I don't know that person. And I looked again. I said, my God, is that my friend? And sure enough, it was. But this face can change so much as to become unrecognizable. whether it go down or up. There's a story of an artist who was painting the Last Supper. This is told of Leonardo, I don't know if it's true. But he found one person who was so beautiful that he asked him to pose for the picture, for Jesus. And then, sometime later, he was looking for somebody who could pose for the figure of Judas. And he wanted somebody who had that look of darkness about him. And he chose somebody, and it turned out to be the same man. We can be devils or we can be masters. It's up to us. God can't make us one or the other. Satan can't make us one or the other. We've got to make that choice. Do you want to go up or do you want to go down? Everybody in the world has been divided by the Bhagavad Gita into two kinds of people, those who are going up and those who are descending. And once you start to go up, you find that that light, that divine joy, you don't have to worry about your faults. You just attune yourself to the divine, and bit by bit you find yourself changing until you become something that you don't even recognize yourself as the person you used to be. He'll do it for you if you attune yourself to him. You need to make some effort, but remember that the major part of that effort is just tuning in to the divine. That's why the thing that Master said to us, more than anything else, more than doing Kriya and more than doing Hong So and more than everything, he said, get in tune. Because through that attunement, he would be able to fill us. Jesus said, in the Bible it says of Jesus, all those who received him, and this is something Yogananda quoted frequently, all those who received him gave he the power to become the sons of God. Receive means to attune yourself. Don't think of the masters as something else. Think that they are acting in you, through you, to help you to become like them. And realize, too, that in that attunement, you don't lose who you are. You find who you are. What they're really doing is simply giving you the power to become who you really are. Look at the difference between Sri Yukteswar, who was strictly a saint of wisdom, and Master was basically just of devotion. And yet attunement with Sri Yukteswar, Master said, made him stronger in his devotion. Or use the illustration of a stained glass window at dawn before the sun comes up. All those colors that are so brilliant look dull. But as soon as the sun comes up behind them, the blues, the reds, the greens, they almost scintillate. And so it is that when that power begins to grow within you, when that attunement begins to rise, you begin to feel more and more of that divine presence. You find that it transforms who you are. All your qualities become more vivid. Then let's hope those qualities are good. Sometimes you see saintly people who have some pretty bad qualities, almost exaggeratedly so, not almost, absolutely. That's why. But you'll see that if by seeing them more clearly, they can also overcome them. So it's not in itself a bad thing. By having something clearly before you to work on, then you can handle it more easily. If all the colors are a dull gray, it's harder to see which is a good color and not a good color. But ultimately you'll see that that clarity that comes into your consciousness changes you to the point where you become that radiant divine being who you really are. You are nothing but that. And all this work of incarnations is just trying to get the hang of it. And once you do, you'll be there. I'd like to read from Whispers from Eternity by Paramahansa Yogananda. I wandered through forests of incessant searchings and arrived at the mystery door of thy presence. On the doors of silence I knocked loudly with my persistent blows of faith, and the doors of space opened. There on the altar of glorious visions I beheld thee resting. I stood with restless eyes waiting for thee to speak. I heard not thy creation-making voice. At last the spell of stillness stole upon me, and in whispers taught me the language of angels. With the lisping voice of newborn freedom I tried to speak, and the lights of thy temple assumed sudden brilliancy and wrote letters of light. In my little chamber of quietness I am always resting. I never speak but with the voice of my silence. Through my silence, eloquently converse with me. What does it mean to believe? Yesterday, somebody came to me and said, well, you've got this conference with all these different New Age speakers. How would you like to try doing a conference with various church people, particularly in confrontation with fundamentalists? And I thought that, I said that would be very interesting. But what I've found from long experience is that they never listen. What we find, however, and it's an interesting fact, is that there's a great deal more in common between fundamentalists and New Age people than either group would want to recognize. We believe in many of the basically same values. Essentially, however, the New Age has, many people in the New Age have mistaken certain things, and also the fundamentalists have mistaken certain things. If we could bring those two things together, we'd find that, in fact, they don't have anything to argue about with one another. Yogananda used to say that fools argue, wise men discuss. And if we could discuss these things wisely, I think that there would be agreement on every point. The thing is that when we affirm our divinity, when we affirm the fact that we are a part of the infinite, we're affirming a reality. At the same time, this mind that does the affirming is much less than that reality, and is incapable of commanding that reality, is incapable of understanding that reality. When scientists try to conduct experiments to see whether we have a superconsciousness, well, it's simply not the way of the superconsciousness to be commanded by the conscious or the subconscious. That's the power that's in control. We have to attune ourselves with it. We can't be telling it that I want to see whether this card that this other person's holding in the other room has a ship on it or an airplane. The superconscious can decide whether it wants to or not, but it's not as easily subject to the skeptical experiments of the rational mind. Skepticism is not the way to achieve truth unless it be that kind of healthy skepticism that says, I want to know for myself. In Autobiography of a Yogi, we read how Sri Yukteswar told the story that when he was a child, his mother said there was a ghost in the closet. Sri Yukteswar immediately went to the closet to find out. He wanted to see this ghost. He wanted to see if it was true or not. The mother said that to try to keep him from going into the closet. Well, we need to have that kind of skepticism, not the skepticism that prejudges and assumes that you're a fraud, but that kind of healthy skepticism that says, I want to know if it's true. Now, if your belief is not that kind of blind belief that refuses to accept, I remember a beautiful phrase in a sentence in Autobiography of a Yogi, reason had forsaken him, he could only shout. And what we've got to understand is that real belief can't be blind. And in fact, I would say that blind belief is one definition of doubt. People who refuse to examine what they believe must not really believe, or they wouldn't be afraid. Truth, Master said, is not afraid of questions. And so when we talk of belief, we're talking of that aspect of the subject that impels us to try to find out more and more deeply, to try to realize more and more deeply. And belief in that sense also must be understood as a repeated continuous act until you finally, we might put it this way, have got the hang of it. I remember many years ago when I was 20, 21, I used to smoke. I'm not quite sure how much I smoked because I gave out cigarettes to my friends, but I would say about a pack a day, which is a fair amount. And I decided I didn't want to smoke anymore and gave it up. Well, it was like what Mark Twain said. He said that smoking's the easiest habit in the world to give up. I've done it 1,000 times. So I had done it. I did it again and again. But each time after a meal, when I had my coffee, the remembrance of how pleasant that cigarette was while drinking coffee would say, well, and I... So I'd get back to it. I failed again and again, you might say. But you know, there are two ways of looking at it, and this is where the idea of belief comes in, belief in yourself. So often when people err, they say, oh, I'm no good, I'm bad, they feel guilty. What they're really doing when they say that is affirming and allowing that affirmation to go into their subconscious that they've failed, that they're weak, that they'll never succeed. Now, if I'd done that, I'd probably be up here like this. But fortunately, I had the right handle on it. I said, I haven't yet succeeded. Now, that's what belief is all about. It's not a brittle thing, an absolute thing, where if you fall down once, you just blow it forever. You've got to believe in yourself before you can believe in anything else. And you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, I've got to believe in that. But you've got to recognize that there's a potential. You've got to believe that there's something inside you that can reach above that reflection. They say that the first 40 years of your life you live with the face God gave you, and after that it's the face you made. Is it going to be a beautiful face or an ugly face? That's up to how you live, the kinds of thoughts you entertain, the kinds of feelings you project and that you feel in your heart, in yourself. And all of this requires having that kind of belief. Well, I had that belief. It didn't occur to me that I couldn't give up smoking. So every time I went back to it, which was quite a few times, I kept saying, well, I just haven't yet succeeded. Well, after a year, I had some incentive by that time. I began to think in terms of becoming a hermit. And I wanted to give my life to God, and I wanted to find truth. And with that thought, there was also this incentive of thinking, well, if I'm out there in the woods, I won't be able to get cigarettes. And besides, who's ever heard of a hermit who smokes? So I had a little added incentive. Whatever it was, I remember one night I was living in an apartment with four other men, and one of them came into my room, and I just suddenly, absolutely decided. And I told him, I'm not going to smoke anymore. And he said, yeah, we've heard that one before. Sometimes your friends are your worst enemies. They hold you to the past. Well, I was absolutely sure. I remember going to bed that night. I must have carried that thought as an affirmation into the subconscious, because when I woke up the next morning, I didn't have the slightest desire to smoke anymore. I carried around a half-empty packet that I still had left and gave them out to my friends. The thought never once dawned on me. One time, 2 months later, I dreamed that I smoked. And my father had given up smoking years before. I dreamed that he smoked too. I felt so guilty for him, so badly for him, that he would take up smoking, but somehow it didn't seem that bad for me too. However, that was the only thought in all these years of desire for smoking, and it came in a dream. When you believe, and repeatedly believe, and no matter how many times you fall flat, you can't believe that easily in your present state, but you can believe in your potential. You can believe in that which you can become. And so you must believe in your spiritual potential That is why the great masters come into this world. That's why channeling is really not the way a great master ever will come to the people. Unless it's through a great saint, that's different. A saint who offers his consciousness up to attunement with that, but you see, you've got to come up to their level. Whereas somebody who simply blanks his consciousness out and lets something talk through him and later says, oh, what did I talk about or something, that's not reality. Many masters have said that the masters don't come in that way. And one basic reason that they don't come in that way is that they aren't there just to teach. They come into this world taking full responsibility for the help that they give people. They come to show us by their lives and by their example what we can be. Because that is what we are already. Mind you, when you explore your potentials, essentially you can say that you're exploring what you already are. It's a very interesting view. I've mentioned this in my book, Crises in Modern Thought, how, in a sense, there's never been evolution. There's merely been the exploration of a potential that was there already from the very beginning of time. If it hadn't been a potential of the universe to produce you and me, to produce intelligence, to produce genius, to produce great saints and communion with God, it could never have come into existence. That potential is there when the rocks were formed. That potential was there when the dinosaurs were battling out on barren plains and rainforests. That potential was there when man was wandering around just sort of in ignorance. That potential is there right now in you. You have within you the potential to be like Jesus Christ, like Buddha, like Yogananda, like Babaji. There's nothing different between you and them except that you have not yet realized that potential. And when we speak of belief, so many people think of belief in a passive form. That's why in the Bible reading we were saying to believe for a student of Leonardo, to believe in Leonardo's talent doesn't make him another Leonardo. And of his students, some would be good and some would be not all that good and some would be no good at all. And it always comes down to the one thing, that those who believed in the right way got it and those who didn't believe in the right way didn't get it. And what is it to believe in the right way? To keep trying to attune yourself. Belief is a dynamic thing. It's a positive thing. It's trying continually again and again until at last you get the hang of it. Belief is necessary because we've got to, it's sort of like what they say in the Indian scriptures, that when you get a thorn in your flesh, you take another thorn to take it out, then you can throw both thorns away. And so the bad karma of wrong thoughts and wrong actions can be overcome by doing good actions and having good thoughts. But finally you get rid of action and thought altogether and merge into the infinite, where thought and action cease to exist because you've gone into that great silence out of which, as we sing in the Festival of Light, song was born. And so what we need to do is believe in order to overcome not believing. Believe in the good in order to overcome that constant niggling tendency to believe in the bad. Somebody says, you're a potential saint, and you say, oh, who, me? Like that. That's believing in the wrong potential. Or believing in the wrong reality, the false reality that you've created by constant wrong action and wrong thought. But you could look at the worst bum on Skid Row, and that same person, that very person, has it within him to achieve and must achieve ultimately. It's our destiny. We don't have another choice. There are a lot of things you can guess whether they'll happen or not. You can't guess about this one. Sooner or later, you've got to go back to who you really are. You can't get away from yourself. I remember years ago I saw the movie The Razor's Edge. This is when it first came out in the 40s. And there, we were talking about this movie over a coffee table at college. And some girl said, oh, I just love to go to India and just get lost. And I said, what would you lose? Whom would you lose? You'd carry yourself with you wherever you go. The thing that we want to escape is the thing that we travel around with all the time. We can't escape other people as long as what bugs us in them is only, it's only a reflection of us anyway. We can't escape that. So we've got to change ourselves. We've got to transform ourselves. And the fact is, you don't have any choice in the matter, because you have no choice in whether you want to be you or not. You simply are you. You're stuck with that for eternity. So why not make the best of it? And the thing is that we keep trying to affirm something that we're not. Asha was talking about some of the people up there on the ridge where Ananda is, up near Nevada City, how some of these people are all sort of into the earth, you know? And so some of them say, I'm a man, and others say, I'm a woman, and they're always affirming these things like this. Well, when you can stop affirming limitation and expand your consciousness, mind you, there are two kinds of people in the world. Well, I read somewhere once that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who divide the world into two kinds of people and those who don't. But in this case, we've got scriptural authority for saying it. The Bhagavad Gita says that there are some people who rise, who are on the upward path, and others who are on the downward path. And this is a fact. You can never remain stationary. Either you go up or down. Either you expand or you contract. And we need to get into that frame of mind, that frame of heart above all, that's expansive, that includes other people in our happiness, that includes other people in our good thoughts, in our supportiveness. I had a lovely experience years ago. I think maybe I told you this story, those of you who were here before, but it's always remained a sweet memory in my life. I was in Paris. It was on my birthday, and I wanted to go to a concert that was being given in a church. And I got to the door, and they were just closing the door, saying that there's no room for anybody else. And I said to them, I shouted out in French, but it's my birthday. And the man said, oh, in that case, come on in. So behind the, by the altar, so that everybody in the audience was facing not only the orchestra, but me and this other few. Well, this is the sort of setup so you can understand how this happened. I was so blissful. It was really a joyful concert. And then later I was going back to my hotel in the metro, and this old woman came up to me and she said, do you remember me? I said, well, no. She said, but I was at the concert. Well, there were 700 people at the concert. I don't know how she expected to know me. But somehow the joy I was feeling was so contagious that she felt so much a part of it that she felt that we were friends. And she started telling me all about her life and trouble she was having with her daughter and all these things. It was really a sweet experience to know that you don't have to go out and sort of buttonhole some stranger on the street corner and tell him, I love you, brother, I just love you. Hallelujah. You don't have to go out and make a big thing of your religion and a big thing of your beliefs and all of this. But if you feel it in your heart and allow that consciousness to expand, somehow people feel good around you. They can't help it. I was in Sedona just a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago. I was there for a few weeks, in fact. And I was there just meditating and resting. And in fact, I finished a play called The Peace Treaty, and maybe some of you would like to act in it sometime. It's great fun and also very full of all sorts of things, wisdom, teaching, and so on. But anyway, I was only relaxing, and the people in the hole in the hotel didn't know me from anybody. But when I was ready to leave, one of the women there said that, you know, everybody in the hotel has been talking about you and how good they feel being around you. They didn't know what I did or who I was. But you'll be able to help people just by being more and more who they are. You see, the reason people love others who are in tune with themselves is because they're in tune with them also. You go to, I remember being with Ananda Mohima or with Master. I've met a number of great masters in my life. I'll never forget, though, that I was talking to somebody in Big Sur a few years ago, and actually I've met probably maybe 18 or 20 people who are great saints in my life. But at that time I was just thinking, just offhand, I said, I've met 6 people in my life who I would feel no God. This was a big sort of lumbering bear. He put out a hairy paw. He said, Shay, you just met the seventh. Well, somehow you feel differently in the presence of him and in the presence of Yogananda. It isn't just saying it. A lot of these people who go around talking about what great saints they are, they're not at all. I mean, they're worse than many other people. But some people in their presence, you feel something. And I've noticed this, that what they do is inspire me to feel my own potential. I realize being with them, the reason that I feel such love. I remember with Ananda Mohima, the last time I saw her, she called me back to talk, and then I had a train to catch, and she said, all right, you go. And I couldn't move. My feet were just rooted to the ground, you might say, not literally, but my heart was so full that I just couldn't tear myself away. But I said, Mother, as long as you're standing there, I can't leave. So she smiled understandingly and left, and then I could go. But the thing is that people will feel that because what they're really feeling is themselves. You really only love yourself in everything because it's the one self of all. It's not as if anybody was above you or below you. We're all in this together. Maybe different grades, but that's the only difference. And so you must believe in yourself. It's not enough to believe that you're a disciple of a great master. It's not enough to believe that these people are good. You've got to say, that shows that I'm that way too, that I have this potential. And the reason that belief is important is to help you to get rid of that hypnosis of belief that you're something else, that you're something different. An interesting thing I wanted to read you from Essence of Self-Realization. Master said, the simple thought that we are not free is what keeps us from being free. If we could break even that one idea, we would go into samadhi. Samadhi is cosmic consciousness. Samadhi is not something we have to acquire. We have it already. Just think, eternally we have been with God. For a short time we are in delusion, then again we are free in Him forever. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Live in the thought of your freedom. Live in the thought of not your freedom to do anything you want to do, bad, different, it doesn't matter. No, live in the thought that you are free in the infinite. That's freedom. Free in your consciousness because not bound. You can't be bound by anybody else. You can only be bound by your own thoughts. When you have a desire, when you have a thought of your own littleness, that's bondage. Nobody else can do that to you. You've done it to yourself. Change that thought. Sir, asked the disciple, if I said I was free, I wouldn't be, would I? Oh, yes. The master then added with a wry smile, but you answered your own question. You said I wouldn't be. You see, we've got to get rid of that hypnosis on the mind. And that's what the spiritual path is all about. You don't have to cry and beg and feel guilty and say, God, please forgive me and all that. That's a waste of energy. You are perfect. Live in that thought. No matter how many times you err, just get up and dust your hands and try again. I've always remembered the story of William the Conqueror when he landed on the soil of England to conquer England. In the Battle of Hastings, the first thing he did was fall flat on his hands and knees in the mud. And this gasp went all over the army, those who had seen him, feeling this was the worst possible omen. This person comes to conquer this country, and the first thing he does is fall flat. William the Conqueror got up with some of that mud in his hands. He said, "I'm so determined to conquer this land that I grasp it with both my hands." And then they shouted with... But he knew that they had to have that conviction. And you have to have that conviction. You have to know that you are a Christ, a Buddha, a Krishna. You have to know it in your heart. But mind you, and here I come back to the original point that I made, there isn't that much difference between, in fact, there's no basic difference between the fundamentalist view of Christianity and the New Age view of Christianity, poles apart though they appear to be, because there's simply a misunderstanding from each side as to what the central reality really is all about. We must believe, but in the right way and in the right thing. We must be humble, but humility doesn't mean abasing yourself, as I put it somewhere. You don't. Humility is not sort of bowing down and throwing dust on your own head. If you do that, you'll be thinking of your own head and of the dust. Humility is forgetting yourself in the contemplation of a much greater mystery. People say, well, if I am that, why should I have devotion to that? Well, the thing is that you need to have a longing to reach up to that which you really can be. Devotion is necessary. If you sit back and say, I'm that already, I read somewhere, I think it was in Seth Speaks or one of those channeling books, where he was talking very condescendingly about Christ as if he was just one of the boys. Well, if you're on, I'm not quoting exactly, so if you're a devotee of Seth, don't bother me with your correct quotations. The essence of it is there. And the essence of it is that you're that already where you are right now. Somebody was singing a song, "I love myself just the way I am." Well, thank you. That can be your trip. It's certainly not mine. Unless I want to get deep enough into this who I am and realize that that's all that I am, okay, then I'll say it. I'll accept it. But I've noticed that the masters are the ones who have the greatest devotion. They have devotion to that ideal because it's that devotion which lifts us up. It's that which is the most... Einstein said that no great scientific discovery is made without a sense of the mystery and awe of the universe. How can... I think God has devotion to himself because he's love and devotion is love. And how could you not stand in absolute awe before this great mystery? I think the saints live in that all the time. Yogananda showed it all the time. He never talked of the other masters as just one of the boys. He always had devotion for them, love for them. I remember him talking about this one master that he met in India, Sri Rama Yogi, whom I had the great blessing to meet also. Master said he was a fully liberated soul. And he met him in the ashram of Sri Ramana Maharshi. And there's this absolutely, if only I could get my hands on that photograph, this wonderful photograph of their meeting. And this saint is looking at Master like that. Who has come? And Master's holding his hand out so blissful. He said they walked around hand in hand for a half an hour, an hour, just hardly saying anything, just smiling blissfully. Master said, if I'd stayed with him another half hour, I could never have brought myself to leave India again, because that's what India has. You don't find masters on every street corner, but there are masters there if you can find them. And there, the wealth of the universe, what to speak of the wealth of one country. And so, they have devotion to these people because they know that this great mystery, this great state of consciousness, is wonderful. It's something to be in awe of. It's something to love. So have devotion to that self, because until you do, you won't be expressing who you really are, because that love is yours. That fullness is yours. How could you not love it when you find it? Don't sell yourself short, is what I'm saying. When you believe that wherever it is, whatever you're believing in, it's much more than that. And whatever that might be, it's much more than that. And the saints themselves say there's no end to the mystery and wonder of God. And yes, that is you, but you don't know who you are. Live in that thought of your potential, and don't think that you can define that potential and understand it, but realize that whatever your understanding is, it's much, much more. Reach up to the heights, and in that you'll find that, yes, all the Christian attitudes of humility, devotion, service, surrender, they're all valid. But they've got to be understood in the right way, a reaching up, an offering up, an expansion to include the universe, and not this little smug sort of condescension to your little ego to say, well, all right, I'll live on your level. That's condescension. Don't be satisfied with what you have and what you are until you know who you really are. Not only a child of God, but the Lord Himself.